Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
The Bernstein and McKnight Show.
As we look forward to our conversation with Jonah Carey coming up in just a moment, let me give away an MLB Network prize pack.
Sounds like proper procedure.
Right. Baseball season's back, and MLB Network is bringing you live coverage with look-ins and analysis from the best in the biz. So give me a number, Connor.
One number, one single-digit number. Show me number 9.
1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9.
Caller 9, nicely done, to the contest line.
That's good.
The contest line.
It's got to be the contest line.
Got to be the contest line. Caller 9, 312-591-6700 will win the MLB Network prize pack. Now, we talk to Jonah Carey of The Athletic and the Jonah Carey podcast. Jonah joins us on the Alpamonte Ford hotline. Alpamonte Ford, 500 new and used vehicles to choose from. Happy baseball, Jonah.
Happy baseball to you guys.
Absolutely. And just 3 weeks or so till Vlad Guerrero Jr., I think, yeah?
No, he's going to sit out the whole season, and then they're going to come out next year and be like, oh, you know what, we're only an 80-win team, and then they're going to sit him next season.
So here's what I've done, and it's taken me one game and just watching some of the highlights, watching what I've seen. I think this shipment of balls may have been from 2016. I think I'm not we're on alert right here. I'm not at full conspiracy theory yet.
It's close though.
But
that is frothing.
I saw enough yesterday to say that we are in what I'm calling an observation period for this.
What's interesting is that when you look at the numbers league wide, you know, the Dodgers set the record for most opening day home runs, overall by teams. But the collective batting average was a little over 200. On-base percentage was about 280 or so. So you've got a weird situation that everybody's hitting like Chris Davis, basically, which is not super fun or good for baseball or entertaining in my mind. I mean, the home runs are great, but some of the same problems persist. Obviously, lots of strikeouts. One other thing to watch, too, and I think this could be more indicative because this is a conscious choice rather than just kind of something that happens. You're seeing a lot of pitchers going away from their fastball. Jordan Zimmermann in particular, he historically has been like a 60% fastball guy. He threw about 30-odd percent of his pitches as fastballs and really tried to stay away from it. It worked brilliantly, by the way, against the Blue Jays. I was there in Toronto actually at the game, and he just mesmerized them. And we saw a bunch of number one starters. I use Zimmermann loosely as a number one starter, but go away from their fastballs more than we've seen before. So maybe the scouting reports are indicating that, and maybe the pitchers that find success will go away from their fastball and not necessarily groove one in there and let the Dodgers do what they did to them.
Yeah, I was reading a little bit of, I think it was Eno Saris who wrote a piece up in The Athletic a couple of days ago about how 2-0 is not a fastball count anymore, and then 2-1 is not a fastball count anymore either. Pitchers are more and more willing. We've been saying this for a couple of years, but pitchers are more and more willing and able to throw their off-speed stuff and flip that nasty stuff up there in previously fastball counts.
Well, the changeup in particular has become this league-wide weapon. You know, it used to be that it was something that you could come into baseball and have, you know, fastball slider, and that was it, and fastball curve, that was it. You use your change as a change. It's not only a change of velocity, but just a change of pace from the norm. But now we're seeing just so many changeups being used league-wide with confidence. You know, whether they're thrown in the zone or not, the point is that they're thrown with command, that there is an idea of where they're going, and usage is just up league-wide, and it creates a situation where players are more confident, pitchers are more confident in throwing it, and as such, they can throw it in any single count. You know, there's still a hesitation maybe to throw a gigantic curveball, let's say a 2-0, but certainly not with a curve and certainly not with, you know, let's say like a slower cutter. Those kinds of things we could see in those counts as opposed to just a straight four seam.
So it's been written up in a couple of different places about how, you know, and John Lester talked about this when he signed his big contract with the Cubs and then in his first year wasn't the guy he wanted to be. We see big-time free agents struggle in their first year. And I'm watching Nolan Arenado and I'm watching Jacob deGrom, who have signed extensions to stay with the same team. Do you figure that there's any kind of – with the same kind of press when a guy stays where he's at and just gets paid, you know, 17 times what he was getting paid last year?
Well, the press is coming from the fact that there's a rash of these things going on. So I don't know that Arenado or DeGrom are getting as much attention as, you know, Harper and Machado.
Yeah.
But I think the league-wide trend is, I mean, certainly from reporters and writers in the know, they're recognizing that these guys are running scared. And yes, they want the financial security, and Nolan Arenado is not underpaid by any means. But even Trout came out and said that he talked to Harper and Machado and that something fishy seemed to be going on, and he went ahead and signed his extension. Now, again, he signed for $430 million. We don't feel bad for the guy necessarily, but it is the case that players are becoming more reluctant to test the open market because they don't want that uncertainty and they don't want to end up on the bum side of it. So I think that's what we're really talking about, that there's no one individual re-sign that people are freaking out about, although Mets fans will say otherwise because the Mets historically have let guys go and so forth, and so they were Mets fans seem to be almost surprised that DeGrom re-signed. But beyond that, it really does seem to be that the overall trend is what's being focused on.
And one guy agreeing to one of those extensions was Chris Sale, and it's never a good sign when national baseball writers are already asking questions about a velocity dip. Are you concerned? Do you share concerns?
Well, let me put it to you this way. So I had to do my preseason picks for all the awards, and one of the things I talked about, I was writing about Aaron Nola, and it was an offhand remark, but I said that Aaron Nola is the most likely pitcher who doesn't have a Cy Young to win a Cy Young this year. And I don't know, 10 different people, it might have been Twitter, I can't remember, said, what about Chris Sale? And not even for a second did it occur to me that Chris Sale would win the Cy Young, not because he's not dominant, but I accept Sale the way that I accept Kershaw at this point, which is that he's going to miss some time. It doesn't necessarily mean that we should be thinking TJ or anything extraordinary like that, but I just don't take it as a given that he's going to get anything more than 170 innings, and less than that would not surprise me either. So if there's low velocity, and that's kind of consistent with what we're talking about, right, that he's going to be a pitcher that requires some maintenance. You still want Clayton Kershaw on your team because the innings that he gives you are still magnificent, and I would say the same about Sale, but I do think that you cannot expect him to be a horse. That's just not a realistic expectation, and lower velocity goes with that, unfortunately. He's going to go through those bouts occasionally.
If you had to circle dates on the calendar by which Dallas Keuchel or Craig Kimbrell sign, where would you put the circle?
I believe, if I'm not mistaken, that it's June when the compensation changes.
Uh-huh.
I think that's right. So yep. Assuming that's the case, then I think that's what you're talking about probably, because, you know, why do it on May 1st at this point? Why not just wait? I think the teams are, you know, reluctant to give up the draft pick compensation, and so they want to wait it out, and we'll see. I will say, and we have a limited data sample here, but when we saw guys in the past say, all right, we're going to try to game the system and come out in June, it was Steven Drew, it was Kendrys Morales, it was guys like Kyle Loesch maybe was another guy like that. They all stunk. They were terrible because possibly not playing baseball for, what is that, 9 months can hurt your performance. You know, spring training is there for a reason, to get the cobwebs out, and you can go practice on as many high school fields as you want, but it's not necessarily going to do anything for you. So that would be my concern, is that whatever team bypasses the draft pick compensation gets a little bit of a lemon, at least in the early going. Now, if you're signing Craig Kimbrell to a four-year contract, okay, you still have 3 years to enjoy, hopefully, Craig Kimbrell. But, you know, in the here and now, if you're expecting a dominant closer, I would start to be a little skeptical. And moreover, on Keuchel's an innings eater, but I don't know that I necessarily expect him to be a much better than average pitcher. There's a lot of value, by the way, in 190 league average innings, a lot of value. Not very long ago, that used to be a four-year deal for $60 million, something like that. And I don't know that that's not warranted now, but that's not the way teams operate at this point. Teams are trying to have it both ways. They're trying to not pay guys for the first 3 years when they have to make league minimum and the player can't do anything about it. And they're saying, we won't pay for backward performance, we're only paying for forward performance. So unfortunately, the CBA is squeezing these guys, and Keuchel seems to be the perfect candidate, where he's, you know, not as good as his peripherals, or his peripherals are not as good as his surface numbers. Say teams recognize that. He's getting older, teams recognize that. A little bit of a health issue, teams recognize that. And they don't want to pay for past performance. So it's a perfect storm, unfortunately, for Keuchel, and is resulting in some financial pain as far as he's concerned.
Now that cameras are tracking everything, every single vector in the game as the ball moves and as players move, what do you want to look at as telling potentially early? Do we now know what canaries are in this coal mine? What changes the way we might start looking at numbers differently once we get to reasonable samples? What can you look at that actually is telling early in a season?
Well, I think you're looking for fastball velocity first and foremost. Pitchers are going to tell you a lot, and I think the Chris Sale thing is a concern. There are occasions when it's just one of those spring things. Zach Greinke notoriously ramps up slowly. Zach Greinke got crushed yesterday by the Dodgers, but he does sometimes come out of spring training throwing 90 or what have you and ramps it up as the season goes on. That's a possibility. But, you know, if you have somebody who doesn't have that history and he's used to throwing 94 and he comes out throwing 91 in his first start, I'd pay attention to that. I would definitely look to see what that's all about. You know, beyond that, with the tech, you could look at spin rate. We don't yet know if spin rate is like velocity, where let's say you have a Justin Verlander and he's got this spin rate for 5 years in a row. If in year six his spin rate is down, does that tell us something? I think that that's something that's sort of the next gen analysis, where not only are we considering spin rate as an overall tool, but maybe it becomes a start-to-start evaluation tool. Is it that Verlander was off his game if he doesn't have a spin rate that we're used to seeing? Or is it that there are real injury concerns or mechanical concerns that need to be addressed? I think that to me is a little bit of a canary there that I would look for, is we've got more robust data. Can we start to break this down into smaller sample sizes than we're used to?
So, Jonah, now that the blob that is The Athletic has reached out and absorbed even you, I wonder if I could ask you about the player poll. Dan and I read through it the other day, and I was kind of struck that yet again Joe Maddon is at the top of the list for managers people want to play for, and damn near the top of the list of managers people don't want to play for. Is it too easy to read into that because it's such it's a poll that's disparate and has a whole bunch of players answering it? And what things stuck out to you most about the players poll before the season started?
Listen, I'm a self-deprecating kind of guy, so I say this with you know, all humility and all that, but I think players really pay attention to what the media has to say. Right. I think that it's very hard to ignore the media completely, and if you play for the Brewers, you have no knowledge about Joe Maddon manages. You just see him in the clubhouse or whatever. You can go and talk to Javi Baez and get it from him or whatever. Or, I don't know, Matt Joyce, if you want to go back a ways. But you're still going to pay attention to what goes on in the media. And it is a fact of life that in the media, Joe Maddon is either loved or he's hated. That's it. Merlot Joe, right? He was called Merlot Joe in, I don't know, 2007. You pull up to his you know, his office and he'll pour you a glass of Merlot and he'll tell stories or whatever. Is that somebody who's trying a little bit too hard, or is it somebody who's genuinely nice and wants to share his Merlot with you? I think it depends. And I think that if you met somebody like that in real life, we're jaded and we're cynical people. Would we say that this is a nice guy? Or what's this guy's angle? What does he want? Why is he trying to ply me with Merlot? Chips and salsa used to be the norm, too. You think beat writers don't want chips and salsa after covering a game for 4.5 hours? Of course they do. So I think that that's going to permeate a little bit, and players are going to take that with them as well. And I think that they're, you know, the combination of certainly talking to some of Madden's current players and former players, but even more so the media is going to dictate that. And Maddon is not going to elicit no reaction, right? He's not, I don't know, Ron Gardenhire. Ron Gardenhire is a fine manager. I don't think he's very polarizing, but Maddon is, because the media has decided that he is, and there you go.
Talking with Jonah Carey on the Bernstein and McKnight show, and while we are throwing bouquets at The Athletic, I want to do so for Mark Carrig,
what a great story.
Who wrote a story, and in case you missed this, apparently, and I thought this, I mean, this is like something out of satire. There's a secret meeting that I guess baseball certainly doesn't want you to know about and didn't want you to know about, but there is a wrestling belt, the sort of thing you see in hockey locker rooms or baseball locker rooms. It's an actual wrestling cheapo championship belt that is literally given to a team each year, the team that best uses the arbitration process to continue to suppress salaries. I find that really gross, and I also think it's an indication of just what labor is up against when the ownership is and management is that damn organized and tight.
I am flat out telling you that I am looking for a different job in 2021 because I don't think we're going to have baseball once the CBA is expired. I cannot understand how the players would not strike. It's beyond the pale, guys. I mean, you know, you've got the general salaries going down, salaries as a percentage of total revenue going down, the owners trying to have it both ways, this system being so locked in from the days of Curt Flood, Marvin Miller, where you were suppressed at the beginning, but you were going to get paid in free agency, and now you're not. And even the little things, you know, the service, holding guys down for service time, we mentioned the Vlad Guerrero tongue-in-cheek, but it's frustrating. I want to see Vlad Guerrero and Bo Bichette. It's better now. Eloy Jimenez signed, and Tatis got called up. It's still better, but it's not where it should be. And minor league players are not where they should be, and Major League Union doesn't seem to really protect the minor league players all that much because they're not part of their organization. And there are just so many different things that need to go into it. And this, to me, is it that big a deal in the grand scheme of things? We know that teams are trying to hold down salaries by arbitration, but to revel in it, to take pleasure in it, to make light of it, this is people's livelihood. And yes, of course, if you drive a truck, you are not making the difference between $3.5 million and $4.5 million. Neither do I. If I wrote for 1,000 years, I would not make that money. I understand. I get that the sympathy is not always going to lie with the players. But the owners are billionaires and the players are millionaires. And the bottom line is that they should be sharing the pie in a reasonable way. They are not sharing the pie in a reasonable way. And the owners are doing touchdown dances and dunking on these guys. And that is not cool. And if only for the sake of pride, I would be really pissed off if I was anything, if I was Mike Trout or if I was the backup second baseman for the Twins. And I would want a pound of flesh out of this. And I would say, all right, you want that? Here we go. Because if the owners don't change their tune, that's definitely what's going to happen. I know there's been labor peace since 1994, and a lot of these players weren't even alive in 1994, but this is just not acceptable. It cannot continue this way, because otherwise the stuff is going to hit the fan.
Is there any olive branch you can imagine that would be enticing enough to both sides?
I don't know what the owners do. I don't even know what olive branch all owners want. The owners are the commissioner, which he's really the emissary for the owners,
yeah.
Seems to be talking about pace of play and whatever. That's just noise. I mean, listen, it's nice for the fans. I understand if you want to speed up the game, that's all good. But the players are talking about their livelihood, and the owners are talking about what are we going to do with the designated hitter 10 years from now. Nah, dude, no. Those are totally different things. Yes, of course, they're both germane to the game, but one is about one side feeling completely disrespected and not able to make the livelihood that they should, and the other really thinking about the game. And I wonder, if anything, if the owners are going to play that card, if they're going to say, look at the greedy players, all they want is money, we're trying to help you. You know, this could be a PR move. We're trying to speed up the pace of the game. Don't you want that? Look how great we are. We're not trying to collect more money from the players. We want status quo. We just want to change the rules. So because of, you know, unfortunately, some fans are not necessarily educated on the fact that, you know, management wants to crush labor. That's just how it works. It works in any industry. It works with auto workers and everything else. And in baseball, it's not as easy to sympathize with the worker because they make a lot of money and because they're really famous and because the owners don't publish their salaries. And, you know, the worth of the franchise is kind of abstract, whereas how much my shortstop makes is very, very much on the top of the brain. So I would encourage people listening to the show to think long and hard. I know that your team comes first, and if Eloy Jimenez goes and gets traded to the Blue Jays or whatever, or signs a free agent contract with the Red Sox, you're not going to care about Eloy Jimenez anymore if you're a White Sox fan. But as a human being, you should still care about the people who play the sport, because without them, there is no sport. There's definitely a sport without Jerry Reinsdorf. There is no sport without Jose Abreu.
Have a great weekend, Jonah. Thank you.
Thanks, Ben.
Thanks, fellas.
That is Jonah Carey of The Athletic and the Jonah Carey Podcast on Twitter at Jonah Carey. We still have a pair of tickets to give away to see the Black Keys and Modest Mouse at the United Center on July 27th. And I am going to give you a baseball quiz.
What you
next.
Got?
I am optimistic you're going to do well at this.
Okay.
But this was Baseball Prospectus projecting the superstars of the next decade. The best projected position players of the next 10 years. Because Pecota, maybe you didn't know this, The Pecota algorithm does 10-year projections available to subscribers on the individual player pages, and there's historical same-age comps. But this is a 10-year projection, and I've got the top 15 who are supposed to put up the most value in the next decade.
Everybody loves a good list. We got one when we come back. It's Bernstein and McKnight, 670 The Score.
For all station contest rules, go to 670thescore.com/rules. Oh. Chicago Sports Station.
Caller 3 to the contest line, 312-591-6700, wins a pair of tickets to see the Black Keys and this band, Modest Mouse, at the United Center on July 27th. So Baseball Prospectus has put together 10-year projections. So right now, if you're starting a team, I will tell you, there's only one guy on this list who is older than 29 years old.
Just one?
Just one.
Okay.
If you're starting a team, start naming guys that you think are going to accrue the most value in the next 10 years.
I wrote down a handful. I didn't pick up a 29-year-old. Show me Mike Trout.
Mike Trout, number one at 80.3 wins above replacement. Same age comps, DiMaggio, Mantle, and Mays.
Give me Manny Machado. Just take the guys who signed for a whole lot of money.
Manny Machado, not on the list.
Okay. Bryce Harper.
Bryce Harper is 13. Same age comps, Mel Ott, Frank Robinson, Frank Thomas.
Bregman.
Bregman is 9.
Ooh.
Top same age comps, Rendon, David Wright, and the guy who's on the list.
Okay, don't give me that guy then. Nolan Arenado.
Nolan Arenado is just after ahead of Bregman at 8.
Andrew Benintendi. Oh, you got comps.
Comps, Ryan Zimmerman, Eric Chavez, George Brett.
Andrew Benintendi then.
Good guess, and never met him.
Just fell outside. Okay. Jose Altuve.
15. Just made the list, Jose Altuve. Same age comps, Dustin Pedroia, Roberto Alomar, and Frankie Fritch.
Ronald Acuna.
God, I love baseball. Hey, Frankie Fritch comes up in this. Acuna is a no.
Acuna did not make the list.
Did not.
Despite playing in center field. All right. Trying to think of shortstops here. So that leads me to Francisco Lindor.
That leads us to number five. Yeah. Francisco Lindor. Same age comps. Tulowitzki, Brett again, and Jose Reyes.
I'll take his double play combo. Jose Ramirez.
Jose Ramirez is indeed on the list at seven. His same age comps. Pedroia, Brett, and Boggs.
I'm a little hesitant on this one, only because of the position he plays and his aging curves for his size and weight combo, but Aaron Judge?
Aaron Judge is number six.
Okay, so shouldn't be nervous.
Yeah, don't be nervous about it at all, because his same age comps are Giancarlo Stanton, his teammate, Daryl Strawberry, and Jose Canseco.
Those are decent comps, steroids aside. So Stanton not on the list then?
We're still looking for two, three, and four.
Stanton not on the list?
No.
No Mike Stanton on the list. Okay. Chris Bryant?
No.
Chris Bryant isn't there? So Jose Altuve was what, 36 wins above replacement?
Yep, 36 right. Warp.
Do a little search of my own. Why don't you fill out a couple here?
All right, let's starting from the bottom, number 14 is Christian Yelich.
Oh.
Yeah, and his same age comps, this is awesome. The same age comps for Christian Yelich are Oscar Gamble, Enos Slaughter, and Al Kaline.
Yeah!
Yes!
Old-time baseball!
And by rule, Yelich must now sport an Oscar Gamble afro.
That would be fantastic. It's because he was so slappy and not with the powers
for his
couple seasons.
Who's
That's
the
why.
Old guy? Find me the old guy. He's number 12, and this surprised me. The only player on the list older than 29
Give me a hint. Give me a hint. Give me just a small, little, tiny hint.
He just switched teams and extended his contract.
No. Paul Goldschmidt?
Paul Goldschmidt.
A right-handed hitting.
Correct.
Aging first baseman.
Correct. I don't know
has
why
a 10-year projection.
Yes, he does.
In the top 15.
It says right-handed hitting, right-handed throwing, college first baseman have a poor developmental success rate, but Goldschmidt is that player type's best-case scenario, comps Lance Berkman, Mark Teixeira, Todd Helton.
So he's the only one over 29, which means Joey Votto's not on the list, which makes a little bit of sense.
Right.
That means Freddie Freeman can't be on the list.
There's one guy who's not in the major leagues.
Oh, Vlad Guerrero Jr.
He's three.
Yeah, Vlad Guerrero Jr.
Top three, same age comps, Mike Trout, Carlos Correa, Jason Hayward.
Well, that'll make all the Pocota haters hate it even more because the guy hasn't taken a major league hack yet.
Number two should be obvious. I mean, you got Trout. This guy comes next.
Oh, Betts. Mookie Betts.
Mookie Betts.
Yeah, Mookie Betts.
His same age comps, Gary Sheffield, Mike Greenwell, and Paul Wehner.
Oh, yeah.
It was Paul and Lloyd Wehner, right?
That's right.
I don't know. One is Big Poison and one is Little Poison. And the legend has it that it was someone from Brooklyn who said, Big Poison, Little Poison. I don't know if it's true or not.
No idea.
I'd like to think that that's true.
Because who are we missing? Somebody in the 12 or 11
range? You're missing number 4, number 10.
Give me 4.
Number 11. 4 is a guy with a great nickname. He has been called a childish Bambino.
Oh. That Juan Soto.
Juan Soto at number 4 for the 10-year projections at 55.8 wins. His same age comps, Bryce Harper, Tony Conigliaro, and Mike Trout.
That's terrific. If Bryant isn't on the list, then that means Baez isn't either.
Correct.
Which means Eloy Jimenez can't be, despite Vlad Guerrero being there. He just doesn't play enough defense, and Vlad's projections are even better. That leaves me at a loss for who I'm trying to pick up at 10.
Number 10 and number 11. 11 is a guy who we had singled him out recently, talking about him as somebody who we thought right now at this point should or would be better. Carlos Correa, indeed, is number 11 after that 200-point OPS drop and an injury.
Yeah, a lot of injuries with his shoulder and everything.
His same-age comps, Hanley Ramirez, Corey Seager, and David Wright.
Good comps.
Now, and
is Corey Seager on the list, or did a Tommy John surgery take him off of projection?
Corey Seager is not.
Okay.
However, number 10, there is a Dodger at 10.
It's not Alex Verdugo.
Think about his age. He's very, very young and very powerful.
Bellinger?
Cody Bellinger.
Wow.
Cody
Even after?
Bellinger
huh.
is 10th. It says that a 22-year-old slashing 260, 340, 470, and holding his own defensively when pressed into action in center field rightfully impresses the hell out of Pecota.
Okay. Okay.
He has the 10th highest isolated power among hitters with at least 1,000 plate appearances since his debut. In the history of baseball, the only left-handed hitters with higher ISO through age 22 are Ted Williams and Eddie Matthews. His same age comps are Yasiel Puig, Miguel Cabrera, and Freddie Freeman.
Wow. Okay, so if the bottom of the list at number 15 was Jose Altuve at 36 wins above replacement projected, Chris Bryant, I logged into my baseball prospectus subscription here just to do a little quick math. Chris Bryant is projected for 35.8 wins above replacement over the next 10 years. So he just missed the list.
He just missed it.
Which makes some sense to me. I mean, I guess, although what surprises me about Bellinger is that his athleticism and multi-positionality is so heavily cited here for a reason that Pecota loves him. What's different about that than Chris Bryant?
I don't know, especially when you factor in positional versatility.
I mean, Bellinger's probably faster, but Bryant can play the outfield and pretty adeptly. He's good at third base. Bellinger plays an okay first base.
I'm not sure how Pecota values ability to age and whether or not, say, look, as this guy ages,
he will... It takes similar types, and if he's 22 and Chris Bryant's 27 and that's the difference, then so be it, but... watching Bryant yesterday was fun. It helped remind me of that lineup I expect the Cubs to be. And if that reminded me of anything else, then you got to think of where Bryant came from, and that brings me to the White Sox. You watched Eloy Jimenez in his first career game.
Didn't look comfortable.
Brad Keller throw him a whole bunch of sliders. And it's two things tying together really what we've talked about all show long. 2-0 counts aren't fastball counts anymore. 2-1 counts that he worked himself into, those aren't fastball counts anymore either. And he picks up an RBI by getting hit in the foot, and that's all well and good. But remember, even some of the greats, even Chris Bryant, started out with a whole bunch of strikeouts, seeing a primetime pitch from a primetime pitcher. Remember, James Shields was still throwing good changeups when he worked Chris Bryant over for a handful of strikeouts. Aloy had a tough one too, but I am very excited to watch both of these lineups. Believe it or not, both of these lineups for the next couple of weeks.
The bottom of the hour is brought to you by the Chicago Wolves. Looking for something to do over spring break? The Chicago Wolves host arch rival Milwaukee Saturday night. Be one of the first 2,500 fans to receive a free baseball cap courtesy of Loyola Medicine. Visit chicagowolves.com for ticket info. Lawrence Holmes pacing the hallways, getting ready to go, and we are going to send it over to him in just a bit. Bernstein and McKnight, you have the score. I want to thank Brad Evans and Jonah Carey for joining us today. If you hadn't experienced Brad Evans before, you have now experienced Brad Evans.
Pure energy.
And yes, it's always like that. Jay Zawoski produced the show. We had Christopher Dickens on the board, Ray Diaz in the back, Brian Gertz with the video feed. And we're going to be out next week. Right?
We should mention. We're hanging out for our Back to Baseball rally. It's here in the lobby of 12 Pruitts, 130 East Randolph Street. The whole lineup, Molly and Haw and you and me and Lawrence Holmes and McNeil and Parkins, we're all going to be down there from 5 a.m. to 5:45 p.m. You can enjoy a day of baseball, talk with your favorite shows and special guests. We'll also award our Cubs season ticket giveaway winner thanks to our friends at Sweetwater Tavern and Grill. It's newly remodeled. It's reopened on the Mag Mile. The broadcast is presented by Redemption Rye Whiskey. Rye is back. Oh, that's so good, too. Get your Redemption Rye Whiskey or bourbon today. It'll be a fun afternoon, fun whole day of baseball and stuff and things to give away.
I also want to say this, too. This is a big day in Chicago for a lot of people. And for CPS, this is Selective Enrollment High School Reveal Day. And I just want to say for all the parents out there that are waiting to start refreshing the computer around 5 o'clock when everything is unveiled, give your kid a hug and a kiss and just let him or her know that it always works out. It's always going to be okay. I know there's a lot of disappointment, and you know how 14-year-olds can get when it comes to, oh, my God, this is the end of my life. My life is over. My life is ruined. And it can be a difficult time. I wish you the best of luck. There are all kinds of wonderful places and great fits and opportunities to send your kid to school. So I hope you get it done. I hope you match. I hope you get what you want. But please, please. You know, these kids have worked their asses off just to get it to this stage. So give them a hug and let them know, you know, that they are they're tired, they're overworked, and they're already crazy smart to have themselves in the running for it. So good luck.
Solid advice. Transition with Lawrence is next. You got the score.
You're done. You're absolutely done for the week.
He's in the pilot's chair getting ready to go, and we have paid for the upgraded systems, so it's not going to actually accidentally go into nosedive mode. So Lawrence Holmes is
set. It's a better plane that way.
I did get on those MAX 8 planes.
We've all been on them.
Like 2 weeks ago when I went out to Arizona, and they were going through the safety stuff, and I was like, wait a minute. Aren't these planes the planes aren't supposed to be flying anywhere? And it was hilarious because, like, before I left for AZ, Parkins has said to me that if he found himself on one of those planes, that he would hysterically be dragged off of one.
Just make a scene.
These things go down.
And so,
no, they're too big. They go down.
And you know how they give you the card? And they're like, oh, well, this is the 737 MAX 8. And I was just sitting there going, wait. I was looking around to see if other people were thinking what I was thinking, like, this is not the plane that we want. We want another plane. Can we get another plane? And we landed safely, but it was still just really strange to be on one of those planes that, you know, the government was like, it's probably a good idea if we ground these.
No, other governments were first.
Of course.
It took us a while to be like, oh, yeah.
Yeah.
The crashy plane. Too crashy.
Canada took a minute on that, too. So it's the first thing that we and Canada have been united on in a while. But we made the decision together, apparently.
But we landed and everything was fine. But it was a strange moment because I had to pick up the car and I go, huh. Yeah, I've heard about these in the news. They crash.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm sitting here in the exit row, and people are going to think that I'm going to help them.
You kind of think it's funny that they're still doing the safety demonstration, because if anything showed, like, nothing you're reading here will help you. Like,
right.
These are the planes that seize up and fall. None of this is going to help.
Connor, I also thought it was weird that they were so proud that that was the plane. That they were like, yes, here's the 737 MAX 8. I'm like, you shouldn't be showing us
You
this.
Should lie about that. You should say we're at a different plane.
Don't say the name of the plane, because the only plane that any of us knows is the plane that the government said don't fly
That's
anymore.
It. That's all we know.
That one.
This is the Crashbox Smolder Medal. Enjoy. And
we're
thank
really
you for
excited
flying.
About it.
Yep. Well, actually, when you say, you know, can we have a different plane? That sounded like my Matt Nagy impersonation. He was like, can I have a different running back? I don't like this running back. I want a different one.
Be careful what you wish for.
Yeah. I'm happy he's gone.
Happy? Why do you describe yourself as happy that he's gone?
I couldn't stand watching him play.
Because really?
You're too slow, and I don't like slow running backs. I like fast running backs.
Okay. I don't know if I'm definitely not there with this. I do think are you guys worried that they're becoming a little chummy with Philadelphia? Like, hey, how about you take this guy, and we'll take that guy, and we'll take that guy that used to work in your organization, and he'll run this. But that's the other thing that's got me a little bit freaked out about this.
Hmm.
If Doug Peterson sees value in Jordan Howard and you run the same offense that they run, but they've run it at a championship level, could your scouting be off?
I mean, to me, that means you're just done with the guy, aren't you?
Yeah,
that's what it sounds like.
Something clearly, whether something happened or whether they just believe pretty endemically that this is not a guy they're able to get into a system, they got ready to move on. That's just what it had to have been. Because they're going to trust a draft pick and some other camp body to make up for a dude who had 1,100 yards in a season. I mean, that's what they've chosen
to do. I hope he does great.
1,300 yards in a season.
No doubt.
Yeah, but he was a really, really big part of awful offenses. Terrible offenses that couldn't
score. He was the bulk part of offenses that were poorly conceived, and they probably ran him out. But if you look at his numbers in December of last year, when the Bears are trying to solidify some things, you know who's going to love not seeing Jordan Howard anymore? The Minnesota Vikings.
Sure.
Because he carved them up in every opportunity he was able to carve them up. I just don't see a reason, unless there's something behind the scenes that we don't know. To me, he still has value because you already know what Tariq Cohen is and what he can do, except you somehow lose sight of that in the playoffs. Then
four carries, just four. That's it.
Well, I think that's no.
But Nagy talked about that, and he said, "Yeah, there are teams that are going to take him away, teams that are going to roll coverage in his direction. That's when you need more fast guys. That's when you need more multi-dimensional guys that can catch the ball, that are going to make a defense account for them in different ways." I think that's his whole point. I think he just wants different toys that can do more things, and he has earned the right to get the guys he wants.
I agree, but I would also say that he hasn't earned the right to not be questioned on some of this
for
stuff.
For sure. He needs to be less predictable in his choices to run. When they were under center last year with one back, they ran it 76% of the time. I was reading Warren Sharp on this. That was the most predictable setup on offense in the league last year. He put some of it on himself in terms of play calling and scheme. So now that's back on him and him squarely. That's back on him and Ryan Pace now squarely, because you can't look at, you know, Jordan Howard or anybody else and go, well, he's lost a step. He's just not there. He doesn't fit the system. Whatever guy they choose is a guy that fits the system. It has to be. That's their choice. So now this run game is very squarely on those two guys.
Well, the other part of the issue for me with the Bears run game was you have to actually do it. And I know it sounds stupid, but to have a run game be as effective as you want, your offensive line has to do it live. You have to actually run the ball to run the ball. Mm-hmm. And when the Bears decided, well, we'll run the ball now, like they did with Howard in December, they were successful at doing it.
Yeah, I don't think he believes in that. This philosophy isn't about the supposed old-fashioned commitment to the run. This is about, what do I see in front of me right now? How do we score?
I'm not even talking about that. I'm not saying that there needs to be a 50-50 split. Okay. I'm not saying that. What I'm saying is that offensive linemen don't get to really run block in practice. And then when you need your run game, guys have had to actually do it for it to work. And when the Bears did decide that they were going to be able to do it, whether they were running some of the middle zone stuff, where I think Howard is probably the most effective, that's when they started to succeed. But it wasn't until they said, well, let's take the ball out of Mitchie's hands a little bit here in December. Let's try and play this a little bit of a safer route. And then they found success with their run game. I'm not here to stand for Jordan Howard. I'm just here to go, was this necessary? Was this a necessary move that's going to make the Bears better? I would feel better about it if it was a draft pick for this year instead of next year, because they only have five picks this year. Now, to Pace's credit, the year that Cohen was drafted was a year where they only had five picks, and they seem to have made three of those five picks count.
Or they could turn it. It's still an asset, and all of these assets are fungible.
Sure.
And
maybe you take a six and a six and turn it into a five this year. I don't know.
Who knows? Everything evolves. I think he's putting together his hand of cards, and then he'll play whatever melds he needs to play when it comes time to do so. So I'm not gonna. You can't judge it yet because of the fluidity involved. I'm certain they're taking a running back in this draft.
Oh, they got to. I would think they have to, but maybe they won't. But I would expect one of the five picks they make is going to be a back. And that is something that we are going to discuss today. Alex Brown is going to join me at 12:20.
Cool. Excellent.
Yeah. I got that text message as soon as the deal went down.
I would imagine.
Alex has some things that he would like to say. So we will do that. Connor, Dan, thank you very much.
Have fun, Lawrence.
I appreciate it.
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly Auto Parts.